This meeting is now being recorded.
So I'm going to follow the agenda that we set. This is Lorene Capon, stepping in temporarily for Jonathan and starting our plenary call. So first of all, welcome everyone, and I want to ask if anyone has any changes to their statements of interest. I am not hearing any changes. I'm not seeing any hands. So I will take that as a no changes. And I see for our first agenda item that we are going to be seeking to reach final agreement on several papers by Stan and one paper by Megan. And I see we have 15 minutes for that. So what I'm going to propose to do is turn it over to the paper writers who are most familiar with any outstanding issues and allow for that discussion to take place. And I'm assuming that Stan is on the call with us. I see him listed. So maybe we can get Stan's first listed paper up on the screen. That's basic market share consultations. Stan, can I rely on you to guide us through this discussion?
Yeah, I'm not sure what we want to do here. This has been through some iterations. Comments are still coming in, and I'm incorporating them as I get them. There's one suggestion for this one that Jamie made, and in the spirit that no good deed goes unpunished, I have asked Jamie to take a crack at answering his own question that appears in the comment on the right by drafting a paragraph or two there. There are several other changes that are small relative to what existed before, and you have the latest version on the screen. I think the main gap here, and we will not resolve this on this call, is the absence of the parking data. So that all these calculations do not take that into account, and I regard that as a major gap in what we've done thus far.
Do you have a sense, Stan, of whether and when you're going to get the parking data? I know we've discussed this, and I'm sorry if I don't recall the answer to that question.
Yeah, I think there are two parts to the answer. Aliza knows the first one much better than I. There are still apparently some issues of contracting involving acquiring the data. I inquired of the analysis group how long it would take them once they had the data to redo all the calculations, taking that into account, and they said a week or two.
Okay, so a week or two from whenever these difficulties are resolved. Do we have an optimistic sense that they're going to be resolved?
Hi, Lorene. This is Aliza. I'm really not sure if they are or not at this point. I wouldn't want to overpromise anything at this point.
Sure.
Okay. There's something that actually, I'm not proposing this, but something that actually would be doable. It's limited because NTLD Stats reports on a real-time basis parking by several measures for all new GTLDs. All the calculations that are limited to new GTLDs could be done with parking data from them. I'm not suggesting that, but that's actually doable.
Well, maybe that's a plan B then, if things don't go according to optimal plan. Did we want to give a high-level summary of what Jamie, your concern and proposed path forward is on the paper?
So we're talking about the addition of the to the beginning of historical context.
Yes, that's the comment that your no good deed goes unpunished going to be tackling.
I will do that. I will come up with a paragraph from Genesis that talks about the creation of ICANN.
And is this so? My sense, and I'm asking the ICANN staff here. My sense is that the purpose of this particular phone call is to try to come to final agreement on these papers. As you all know, the competition has not been my area of focus, and I'm just stepping in for Jonathan here. But other than the lack of parking data, which is a necessary absence here for that we've heard from Aliza, at least for the time being, and the addition of some context about ICANN and its formation, are there any other outstanding issues regarding this paper that still need to be discussed? And staff, if I'm misunderstanding what is the purpose of what we're supposed to be doing, I'm going to rely on you to jump in and give me more complete information. But that's my sense. And now
Could I ask a question? What it means to have complete agreement, or whatever the term is here? Because I picture these as still works in progress, and if new good ideas come along, either from me or somebody else, I think we should be able to put them in. What's the purpose of finalizing this other than preparing for the meeting in India?
Again, and Stan, I'm sort of stepping in here on the fly and giving you my best judgment. Here's Loreen Capon's sense, not speaking as chair, speaking as herself. As myself, my sensible, good judgment, hopefully self, I see that the papers are going to continue to evolve as we get better information and sometimes as we get feedback from our colleagues. And we certainly will have feedback from the community. So these are works in progress. But what I see is the purpose of this phone call is to get things teed up for Hyderabad. So to try and put things in as set a form as we can so that when we're presenting something in Hyderabad, it is with the understanding that our team members have had an opportunity to comment and express their perspectives, and that these papers are the best and final expression as of now of that. So I basically see this as teeing us up for Hyderabad, not as setting it in stone forevermore. Does that make sense? It does, except of course that
the presentations there are going to be much more abbreviated than we have here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, my understanding just from our leadership call, Stan, this morning, is that really the next step for everyone is going to be to extract a high-level narrative so that we can make a presentation in Hyderabad that gives a summary of these much more detailed papers. You know, and it strikes me as along those lines, Stan, and maybe you have already been working with that with Jordan, that that it's going to be helpful to have some sort of high-level executive summary of each paper to feed to Jordan so that he's able to make this presentation in Hyderabad, but I don't want to step into the workings of your group too much. That's just
But Jordan, I think Jordan is already in the process of drafting such a document himself. So you're quite correct there. Actually, while I have the call, while I have the line, I did make some suggestions on an email I sent this morning, because I think we also have to preface everything we're doing by an overall discussion of some of the limitations under which we are working, and I think that's just also important for stage setting.
Yes, and I was going to reply to your email, but since we're on the phone, I'm going to do that now. I heartily agree with your preface in that email, I think you're right. We need to set the stage, which is that these are early times. There are certain situations where data is missing, so this is very much a work in progress and an interim report, and I think that is absolutely something that should be said at the outset to align this as to the place and time where we are, which is very early. So I heartily agree with that.
Thanks.
Okay. That being said, does anyone have any other comments that they feel need to be aired before we come to our, what I'll say is the interim finalization of this paper? Okay, I am not seeing any hands. Okay. Then that said, let's move on to the next paper, which is also yours, Stan, on industry structure.
The main missing thing here is a table that analysis groups, I think, said they would have by the end of the week, which is the Project 6 table, which is basically, think of it as the size distribution. I'm sorry. Think of how many registries have between 1 and 10 registrars, how many we can have between 10 and 25, et cetera. And they'll produce that table. I think that's important. I would back and looked at some NTLD stats data. Some of these new GTLDs have well over 100 registrars. So it's an interesting statistic to me. The other thing that's sort of been added in the last little while, I had an exchange with Carly yesterday, and this issue of what about these really little guys, and I think the way to say it is the way I try to say it here now, which is that because of the availability of these inputs through the market, that is registrar and back-end services, the way I would put it is the minimum viable scale of a GTLD has been reduced. That is, a GTLD could survive with smaller numbers of registrations because of this than it could if, in fact, it had to produce all those inputs internally. And so the phrase minimum viable scale appears in here. It didn't appear here before. Other than that, this is pretty much what you had earlier, and it's still waiting for the Project 6 table.
Okay. So I think Jonathan is now joined us. Jonathan, we're at Stan's second paper. The first paper, Stan informed us of, some missing data and what the plan A and plan B is to deal with that, but there weren't any comments. We also clarified that when we talk about finalization of the papers, it's really as final as it's going to be for Hyderabad, but things still may shift as we get feedback from the community and we get more data and we even may get some straggler feedback from our colleagues. So Stan had asked for a clarification of what we mean by final. But that's where we are, and Stan just presented where the second paper is. And what I would ask is if folks have any comments or concerns about that paper, and then turn over the chair back to Jonathan to take it from here.
Thanks, Lorene. Sorry I was late. So, yes, do people have questions or comments for Stan? Otherwise, is this paper minus the Project 6 table ready for inclusion into a draft for community feedback? Okay, seeing no comments, let's move on. We're going to assume that it is. So that's we'll call that semifinal, Stan, to answer your earlier question that I missed. Thank you for your work on this presentation. Have Megan on the call. I don't see her name, but she might be on the phone. Does anyone know if Megan's on the call or not? It looks like she's not, so let's move on. At the concentration ratios. I'll reach out to Megan. Does somebody want to email Megan to see if she can join the call? Maybe we did your apologies. Okay, thanks, Alice. Sorry, Stan, you thought you were getting a break, but you're back up.
This hasn't changed much, but I've actually been thinking a bit more about this apropos of the thing I circulated this morning. There's something I said very early when we started to talk about measuring industry concentration, that what I had in mind then, I still believe, which is that we cannot be definitive about how to define the market yet. And we ought to say that we're going to provide concentration measures for a variety of alternative market definitions. And at some point, I think I'll want to add language to that effect here. The other thing I want to say here is this, and I'll talk to Jamie about this later, but it was provoked by the comments he sent me yesterday. I know some people have said, well, concentration isn't competition. And so I try to say two things here. One, often it's a good proxy for it, and there's a lot of literature on that. But the other point I would make is that if we had had better data, most importantly the registry, legacy registry price data, we could have conducted this analysis in a very different way. We could have analyzed the effect of entry by looking at those prices and see whether they had changed in response to entry. I'm thinking of a very useful paper on another subject in which people very interestingly calculated the effect on prices of wireless service in the U.S. of the entry of two or three wireless carriers in the 1990s. And that's the sort of thing I would have liked to be able to do here. And maybe in the future when we have better data, we can do that. It would also require us, by the way, to go back and get the data that would have existed before the new GTLD program. So this thing says two things. One, we're looking at concentration. That's a quite reasonable thing to do. We would have done something in addition to that had we had better data, and I think that's actually related to a suggestion I think we all agree to now, is that these are data that ICANN should be trying to collect in the future so that it can better analyze competition.
For sure, Stan, that's a great point, and I think we definitely need to make that a hardcore part of our recommendations and really suggest that ICANN is front and center of collecting that data, whether it can represent updates to contracts, get it, or if there's other ways to gather it along the way and archive it so that better study can be done in the future.
And I would even argue that we ought to try to go back to answer the question, what was the effect of the program, it would really be useful to have data as of 2013. And the registries have it. For historical purposes, that would be very useful to have.
It would indeed. And then on your first point, Stan, about market definition, I almost feel like that's its own little section on the contemplations on market.
Yeah, I'm going to write something up. One of the problems of writing modules is I don't have a good clear picture of how the flow among these sections works. But in part in response to suggestions, I realize I should have included a paragraph or two on that. I don't know whether I should try to do that between now and tomorrow, so you have it for Hyderabad, or just put it in a later version. It's on my list of things to do.
Yeah, I'll definitely spitball it. So the key is I'll try to coordinate with you about the high-level way to represent that question, because it's even where we want to make some kind of passing reference, at least, to the alternative online identities thing that the ALOC folks brought into the picture as well, that we got partially addressed in the survey but have zero data for, but that we can sort of say that it's one possible, you know, market definition that could be studied by others or something like that, to make sure that we incorporate what little data we have about at least user behavior on that.
Let me tell you one other thing. This issue has come up a number of times about substitutability. So I think it's a real important question. We have a little bit of stuff about that from the project that Jordan has had us do, which is how many people chose a new GTLD name rather than, even though it was available in .com. And I think that gives you a little bit of picture of the substitutability. But as I think back about it, that's the sort of thing would be nice to have had through the Nielsen surveys. And unfortunately, I don't think we got that. But that's an important gap in our knowledge. That's one of the reasons we're doing multiple market definitions, is because we don't understand substitutability all that well.
Good point. Do folks have any other comments? Calvin, do you ask a question about making an interim recommendation? Do you mean about the data, or do you was that something else that you were suggesting? Do you want to speak?
I have a question. Can I go first then? I was just thinking that if we made an internet recommendation to them to start collecting this data, before it's too late and has passed us by, or passed the community by in future.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we did go through an effort to try and get some data collected as we went along, and we're going to be making a new set of recommendations for data that ICANN should be collecting. So if you look at the original metrics document, it had data sources that ICANN did begin with. And I think what we're going to be doing is putting a little bit more nuance behind the theories behind those things so that different types of calculations can be done by the next review team. So I don't know if there's anything interim to do, but I can certainly, in front of the board, make the point about the data right off the bat and see if there's anything they want to do about it right away. But I think we need to just focus on completing our review rather than taking a branch off to make an interim recommendation.
Jonathan, this is Carlos. I have a question for Stan.
Go ahead, Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. This is Carlos for the record. I'm sorry, I'm on a phone line only. Stan, just a clarification. When you talk about substitutability, which is really very important issue, you mentioned survey. That would be surveys of registrants, I guess. And I wanted to have it clear, separate from the previous recommendation of parking, if if that wouldn't conflict. I mean, if we chase the registrants and start asking them why have you reserved 3 or 4, or why did you take a new generic being.com 3, are we going to ask them, why did you park them and didn't activate them as well, or is this a separate suggestion? We should really discuss what kind of service we want from registrants, because that would be a very valuable source of data for the future.
No, I hadn't thought about that, but what I had in mind was asking about which domain to register in. But your point's well taken. We could ask them, to the extent that you're parking, why are you parking? I think sort of more generally, if ICANN were fielding a registrant survey today, I think we could ask a number of questions that, in fact, would fit very nicely into the set of questions we're trying to answer here. Obviously, those surveys were fielded before we even existed. But I take your point, and one thing we might want to do is say, here's what we'd like another survey to, the kind of information we'd like another survey to obtain. So I take your point very much.
I think it's a very good idea, and that's a very, very specific recommendation we should prepare very nicely. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, by the way, we did have there was a series of five questions that I originally posed to ask the question, was this a duplicate, was this a substitute, et cetera. There were five of them. I think they didn't get asked very crisply in the second survey, but maybe the next survey they will be.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. Jamie, go ahead.
Thanks. Stan, I just had you and I will talk later on about reliance on HHI, but on your basic market share calculations, the last cause. And I don't understand that terminology, but I know that's what we're using. But it says ICANN's requirements may make it difficult for new back-end providers to enter the market. Do you elaborate on what that is in another paper?
Where are we? I'm sorry.
On your this is the last point on your basic market share calculations paper. This is a two-page paper.
I'm just shuffling stuff here.
This is a research discussion worksheet.
I'm sorry. Is this the one that's on the screen?
No, it was one that was linked to in the agenda.
I'm not sure it's mine. I don't recognize it, but tell me where it is.
I can put the link in the chat.
Which is the not mine. This is Jordan. So
okay.
Tell me where we're looking.
Okay, never mind then. Sorry. I thought.
Right, so where are we looking?
At the very end.
I don't recognize
yeah.
that.
Okay. Well, I'm disappointed you don't have an answer for that, Stan.
I can make one up.
Yeah, no, that's my job. Okay, thanks a lot. Never mind. No further questions.
Okay, great. Any other questions on the paper that we're actually discussing? Okay, that's great. Let's move on to Dehan's paper on registry policies. Any amendments to that paper?
Actually, there is no particular update on this paper. But the thing with this paper is that the high-level question we should reconsider. So when we discussed about this project a few months ago, at that moment we thought that that high-level question is quite good for that project and reflecting the purpose, what we looking for. But after we get data and find and finish some analysis and conclusions that we discovered, and many people from sub-team raised that issue, that this high-level question is not so perfect for these findings and projects. So I think that we should reconsider that with the whole team and maybe to find some better place for this data. So that's for now. The same question will apply for another project that I'm presenting later, URC versus UDRP.
So I think the high-level question doesn't apply. That came up in the last poll. Was this because of the problem that we that Stan raised on the last call, that we don't know whether users know of policies?
Stan raised that question also, Jordan, and generally it's very hard to prove that registrants making some analysis of policies before they decide which domain name and which string to choose. Probably some of them doing that, but it's not usual, so usual. If this project is under that question, purpose of that would be to answer on that question. Are the registrants choosing string and registers based on their policies? But
so part of what we want to do is keep a running tally of questions we want to ask registrants, because they're going to be coming from all sides. So that's probably something that, as one of our recommendations, we'll have a fairly developed set of questions given the ability to start all over again, that we might ask registrants. So let's have everybody keep that in mind as you're working on this, and set aside questions that you'd like to ask registrants, and then maybe the next time there's a survey, we can get those questions on the list.
Yeah, that would be one of the way.
Right, that makes sense.
Okay.
Are there other questions? This paper isn't new. Are there other questions or comments for Dan? This was just a check-in to see if there were any updates from the last time it was presented.
I actually think, although it doesn't fit under non-price competition, it's actually quite interesting stuff. I hope we can find a place for it.
Oh, I think definitely, and the other thing that's interesting is that it sort of fits under Lorene's narrative about trustworthiness as well, when it comes to privacy policies and things like that. So I think there'll definitely be a place for the analysis. So I'm not about that, because the narrative that Lorene is developing, I think it would slide well into that. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's move on to Wadu and the discussion of brand TLDs.
Hi, Jocelyn. This is Alice. While Joe is sent to the project, I'm sorry.
He's on the phone or not on at all? What did you say?
He sent an email saying they couldn't join, so I'm afraid he's not on.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Let's keep going then. That's Watto again. We're down to price analysis with Stan.
This is actually has been changed a bit in response to very good comments from Megan and Carlton. So if people have a chance to sort of go look at it. Basically, it's because of the absence of data and the presence of the caps, just makes it hard to draw inferences. And so what I try to do here is to speculate about what might be happening, but we can't be very definitive about it. I was thinking about this, about what inferences we could draw from the little bit of data that we have here. And I guess I would say if it had turned out that the prices for the new guys had been way, way higher than the average of the price caps, that would have been some information that you would say they couldn't possibly be providing any constraint at all. Given the fact that they don't seem all that far apart, it's really hard to draw any inferences, and I basically try to, you know, say as much as I could here without hanging myself. And so I think people should go back and look at this carefully and look at the exact wording. A lot of the wording changed in response to Megan and Carlton. And the nuances here are important. I want to make sure I'm not overstating the case. Hello? Hello?
I can hear you, Stan, but I don't hear the rest.
Okay, good. Fine. I'm sorry. So please, this is a trickier thing to write for all the reasons I've suggested already. And so people should look at it and make sure we're not overstating the case.
All right, so we'll definitely do that. Carlton, have you had a chance to look at this document, this new document yet? Because it would be important for you to see if it captured the comments that you submitted. Do you have microphone ability, Carlton? We're not hearing you, Carlton, if you're speaking. Well, I see that you're typing. Yes, but muted. Can you unmute? I'm not sure. Oh. Staff, did we mute Carlton because of noise on the line or something like that?
Yeah, I'm hearing though. They just unmuted me.
All right, there you go.
This is Carlton. This is Carlton for the record, Jonathan. Yes, I did read Stan's update, and I think it pretty much captures what I was trying to say. And I also looked at what Megan was suggesting, and in my opinion, the changes captured what I think we were putting to Stan.
That's great. Thanks, Carlton, and thanks, Stan, for incorporating those comments. And then everyone, please take it as a takeaway to take a look at this. Stan has flagged that this is a little bit more nuanced language, and that's where Everyone's going to want to be sign off before that's trotted out to the public. So please make a look at this price analysis document. Staff, we may want to re-mute Carlton because he's apparently got a noisy line. Thank you, whoever was responsible for that. Thank you. Dehan, you have another paper to discuss?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
All right, great.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Yeah, as I mentioned before, high-level question has the same problem here with this project like previous one, registry policies. So this researching is based on CCTV metrics reporting and right protection mechanism review. Generally, URC improved right protection mechanisms, and it's more effective in order to take down websites which infringe intellectual property as well as to fight cyber squatting. If we comparing fees with UDRP fees, it's lower in URS case. It's, I don't know, for 4 times cheaper if you compare it with a single panel at WIFO, for example. In general, URC, as I mentioned, is more effective, but it has unlimited purpose, and it's only dedicated to suspend domain name. It's domain name with this process, after this process can be transferred or deleted. So that's the main concern of trademark owners, that they don't have possibility to transfer to they don't have possibility to transfer in their property that domain name, or to delete it or to forbid it. And after the domain name, which is suspended, expired, it's available to be registered by another infringer or cyber squatter. So that's the limitation of this process. So that will be that in a short.
Great. Thank you, Dehan. Do have other people had a chance to take a look at this? Do you have questions based on the overview? Obviously, the opinions vary wildly as to whether or not there's been sufficient improvements for trademark owners, but URS is a significant reform. Are there other comments or questions?
Before questions,
Alex,
I hit.
Go ahead.
For me or someone else, I didn't hear you well. Can I add
Dehan, you go ahead.
Okay, we had a discussion yesterday on our sub-team call, and Waldo and Jordan, as I remember, asked about how many URC processes held in the last few years, and to compare that with UDRP, and I'll do that in the next few days and make that addition. It's available in CCT metrics, so just to add that before any question.
Thanks, Dehan.
Okay.
Are there any questions or comments on this? Did David Taylor say that he couldn't make it on? Yes, okay. Dan, if you could do me a favor and send a non-group email just directly to David Taylor with this document, then that might get to a different place in his inbox. And
okay.
and get his feedback on this because I think
okay.
he's
I'll do this.
best equipped, and he you know it's possible he has a rule that all the group emails go into some folder that he checks periodically, so just send a direct message.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Thanks for your presentation.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And is Jordan is not yet on. He was not available for the first hour or so. So I guess it's Laureen, it looks like it's back to you, and then we'll double back to Jordan when he joins the call.
Right, and I'm actually going to sub-delegate to the people who are most involved in the papers. What I'd like to do is just to have people give a very, very brief, high-level summary of their papers and then discuss any topics that still need further input or if there are topics that still need further airing to deal with those on this call. And then proceed that way, if that sounds all right with you. So,
it does.
Okay. Good. So I'm not sure whether we have Sal on the call, but I know we have Carlton. So, Carlton, can you give a very short summary of the consumer awareness paper, and my sense with this paper is that you have reformulated some of the focus on the sub questions to make sure it relates to awareness and trust, and perhaps the place for input may be on recommendations. But I'm going to leave it to you to define this as you think is most helpful.
Yes, this is Carlton for the record. So we had a discussion about the paper originally, so we kind of refashioned the paper to focus more on trust and the relationship with awareness and trust. And we changed the sub-questions and found data that we could support the sub-questions from the Nielsen surveys. And Gal and I just kind of combined the two groups that we were looking at, consumers and registrants. And we asked them questions. Awareness increased year on year. Was greater awareness leading to increased trust? What attributes, practices of new GPLDs that led to increased trust? We were trying to see what was it that made them more trustworthy. And we asked the question because it came up quite often about alternative identities in terms of where registrants were going, and we asked were alternative identities more trustworthy, and we threw in a question there because it came up, and this is for everybody to weigh in on this. Is does that kind of a role in promoting increased awareness by consumers of the new GTR? What we have found, trust has increased year and year on the consumer side, but it seems to have decreased on the registrant side. One of those anomalies that you may take some digging to figure out what it really means. If you look at the data, and this is mostly from the phase two research for both registrant and survey, you would see total awareness on the consumer side increase by almost 20%, from 46 to 62% between 2015 and 2016. And then there is the question of the because the two waves had a different set of new GTLDs, which the questions were asked. You see in the report a distinction between what they call consistent new GTLDs, which is the set that was in play from 2015, 2016, and then and ones that were introduced additionally. But suffice to say that in the consumer segment, trust awareness increased year on year. In the registrant service survey, it decreased year on year. It seems to from the import from the data, it was not even across regions. Trust in consumer on the consumer side was highest across Europe, increased across Europe, and followed by North America and Asia Pacific. And in the registrant survey, the decreases were highest in Africa, followed by North America and Europe. Asia Pacific kind of remained steady. If you look down at the detail of what was happening in Africa, the South African numbers drove what the Africa area was producing. Awareness seems to be highest for geographically targeted GTLDs by customers, regardless of where they are. The consumer awareness was independent of the time that the GTLD was in play. That is, it's a delegated and live available for registration. And that is so regardless of the first set or the second set. In contrast, consumer awareness remained higher for legacy GTLDs, and that continues to grow. Consumer awareness was not is independent of the number of domain names sold in each GTLD, and that is for the new GTLD segment. Then, in response to the awareness and trust in TLDs, trust seems to have a slight decrease in the consumer segment. The registrants was a mixed bag because they are showing that less than half of the new GTLDs, including the geo-targeted GTLDs, were seen as trustworthy by registrants. And registrants, though, generally have higher trust levels than consumers. And there's some numbers there that show you what the average trusts were. If you look at trustworthiness with consumers versus registrants, it is clear between 2015 and 2016 overall that registrants had less trust. And that when you ask what attributes, practices led to increased trust, the answer came back, registration restrictions seem to increase trust in the registrant group. Purchase restrictions in those new GTLDs also increase trust. Then there is the reputation of the GTLDs and perceived safety, security, and usage. And here's something that goes all through the registrants as well as the consumer surveys. familiarity with the extension seems to have a lot to do with trust. If you look at the details of about trust restrictions, registrants have become more opposed to registration restrictions overall than consumers. And that is looking at 2015 data versus the 2016 data. It seems to be opposition to restrictions seems to be trending down in the registrant sector. The increase is seen mostly for those new GTLDs with implied purpose, which is something that we can look at more closely, I think, in the next wave. Alternative identities, more trustworthy. Mixed bag here. If you look at the registrants, they tend to have more alternative identities at use in the new GTLD registrants versus the legacy GTLD registrants. What is interesting, 1 in 4 of them say that they're using alternative identity in lieu of registering additional domain name, and this seems to be more prevalent in South America and Europe. 1 in 6 says that they did not renew a domain name in favor of using an alternative identity. More than half of them, 54%, say they would be less likely to register a new domain name or renew an existing one, which is probably more interesting for us to continue to look at. And if you look at doubling down on why they would be less likely to renew new domain names or renew existing one, cost and ease of use seems to be top of mind for them. The rest of the report just gives you some more details of what is happening in select TLDs, especially those that have implied purposes. So all in all, the recommendations would registry owners consider choosing strings closely related to their purpose for a measure of trustworthiness. Registry operators might look at that. There's the note here that says recommendation requires high level resource. The idea also, because restrictions are related to trust and trustworthiness, the suggestion was that we consider enhancing those attributes that would improve trustworthiness in the new GTLDs. And for those registries that were judged to be low on trust, then the idea is that they might do something to improve trustworthiness going forward in their own right by having some campaign to make them more known or more aware. Awareness seems to track trustworthiness. And they might also want to look at what attributes they might assign to the registry that would improve trust. So that's about what we have here.
Thank you, Carlton. I want to pick up just on some comments in the chat. And I one of them really relates to sort of how the lens through which we view these shifts in numbers between the wave one and the wave two studies. And I think that's an issue we've talked a little bit about in our group, but I think bears emphasizing is that I believe there's a 5% margin of error that Nielsen states the survey results are susceptible to. so that when we see a decrease or an increase in numbers, whether it's an increase in, or decrease in trust or some other percentage, if it falls within that margin of error, it's not necessarily statistically significant. So we wouldn't want to say something has increased or decreased if it's only within 5%, because it's within the margin of error. So that's just something we need to keep in mind when we're reporting on these results, that if it's within that 5% threshold, we can't really rely on that as something definitive.
But it's precisely. That is why we always say it's a mixed bag, because if you look, and why you go down to the regional level, Lorene, because if you look at the regional reports, they tend to differ in quantity, and that's why it's important to look at the regional and see where the numbers are coming from. In some areas of the world, it's more important. In other areas of the world, it's not. So that's why it is a mixed bag, and we have to be mindful that it's not even across the world.
Yeah, so I think we're on the same page there. So I'll open it up for questions. If folks have questions or comments for Carlton.
Hey Carlton, it's Drew. Yeah, I think it'd be great if maybe along the lines of what you and Lorene just discussed, you keep all the parts where you're emphasizing the statistically significant differences in all the different parts of the world and the variations from one year to the other, but then change the way you word average consumer, the overall reflection that average consumer trust in new GTLDs reflected a slight decrease, because that one is not statistically significant, whereas the breakdown you're talking about is. So I think that sentence perhaps should instead reflect the fact that average consumer trust did not reflect a statistically significant change, whereas individual metrics measuring consumer trust did, and then lead in that way.
Yeah, sure. Andrew, this is Carlton. Sure, that is perfectly reasonable.
Great. Any other comments or questions for Carlton? And thank you, Carlton, and Frau in absentia for putting this together.
Lorene?
Yes, Stan.
I'm not sure they're always, the average margin error is always 5%. I just don't remember. I remember when the guy from Nielsen presented stuff to us, he actually would say this difference is not significant. Perhaps we could just run these differences by him and have him confirm which are not significant. And by the way, the significance also depends on the confidence level that one uses, so it's not a it's a complicated concept, but maybe at least we could rely on him for at least vetting the numbers, so that when we say something is different, he agrees that they're different.
Right, and that is actually a question we had posed to Aliza, our excellent resource on a lot of the Nielsen data matters. And unless I'm misunderstanding what Aliza had conveyed, it was that for this particular survey, 5% was the margin of error. But Aliza, jump in if I've misunderstood that.
Thanks, Lorene. This is Aliza. So Nielsen states in the methodology section of the report that they are reporting the findings at a 95% confidence interval.
All right.
It was as far as I understood, it was a plus minus 5% point margin of error. But that being said, I think Stan has a good point, and I do think it's worthwhile to share these with Nielsen and make sure the conclusions we're drawing are in line with what they've reported.
Great.
Lisa, I think that's actually very important. I think using the words 95% confidence interval level in a footnote would be useful to the reader so they know what we're saying, what we mean.
Sure. I will share this paper with Nelson. Thank you.
That's great.
And I think in general, as we're considering these narratives, we need to be mindful in both the competition and the consumer trust arenas that some of this stuff is technical and not intuitive, and we need to be able to translate this in a way that average Joe and Jane can actually figure it out. Because when I hear 95% confidence in interval levels, then I'm sure I just garbled up that phrase horribly. But what I need to know for a translation is that, it could be plus or minus and not be meaningful. We can't just rely on it. So I think we need to have the precise technical language there, Stan, but then I think we also need to have a real-world translation so that someone actually can understand what's being said.
I'll try to help with the translation.
So good. Thank you. Okay. So any more questions or comments for Carlton? Okay. Then I think unless Jordan has joined, if we want to go back to Jordan's high-level findings now, Jonathan, or do you want to continue on the consumer trust track?
I mean, I guess I'm agnostic about that. We may as well have you continue and pick up with Jordan, unless he's got a schedule, it should pick up with Jordan when you get through it.
Sure, that's fine. Okay, then the other Jamie, is the next person up to talk about consumer trust in the DNS, whether that's improved overall.
Sure, thanks, Lorene. And I will be brief. This paper looked at the two Nielsen consumer surveys and the two Nielsen global registrant surveys, specifically at the question of trust in the DNS. And at a high level, what both of those series of surveys found was that for both registrants and consumers, trust in the DNS was high in 2015 and remained high and actually to increase in 2016. They gauged that primarily by looking at trust in the DNS compared to trust in other technology industries like ISPs and applications providers, service provider, online service, e-commerce. And what they found was that that in most cases it was actually higher than it was for other tech industries, but it was at least as high. As I mentioned, there was an increase from 2015 to 2016, but there's not enough data to see whether that's a sustained increase. And let alone causality, whether it's because of the new GTLD program. Trust was highest in Asia and Africa, and there was more skepticism in Europe and North America. There was some really interesting findings on the issue of validation verification, or what registry operators might do for certain strings, and a lot of the respondents did not like the idea of any restrictions. In other words, they like open TLDs, but they also expected that strings, you know, is associated with a regulated sector would be subject to, even if it's more, you know, self-regulation in terms of making sure that they don't go to anyone perpetrating fraud or other illegal activity. So that's what this paper reviews. Happy to take any questions.
Okay, questions questions for Jamie. Jamie, I'm not seeing or hearing any questions. So thank you, and thanks for also being responsive to various feedback and your quick turnaround with that.
Absolutely.
Okay, then moving on, we are now moving from awareness and consumer trust issues, and I'll just remind people that we have, on the prior plenary call, there was a discussion of consumer trust more explicitly, so that is the third paper that would be added to this, but it's already been discussed. So there's the awareness component, there's consumer trust in the new GTLD program vis-a-vis legacy GTLDs, and then there's consumer trust overall in the DNS. There's those three segments. Now we're moving on to a separate but related segment, which is, has the new GTLD program put mechanisms in place to improve trustworthiness? So we move from this subjective viewpoint, what are people's perceptions of trustworthiness, to something at least in theory, more objective. What mechanisms have been put in place to improve trustworthiness? And here we get to the safeguards. So even though this is organized in a way that talks about background and description, and particularly safeguards applicable to all GTLDs and sensitive and highly regulated GTLDs. In fact, a lot, and the technical safeguards, really most of this information is contained in two different papers. Calvin's paper on the technical safeguards and the implementation of those. And then my paper, which provides some background and descriptions of the new GTLD safeguards and how that has been implemented. Those are at least in my part, it's a rather lengthy paper that already actually has quite a bit of narrative already in it. But if I were going to put things at a very high level, what I would say for an overview is that many of the safeguards implemented as part of the new GTLD program arose in the context of ICANN's decision to implement GAC safeguard advice as a result of the Beijing communique. And much of the intended goal of that safeguard advice was to mitigate increased risks that might come about as a result of expanding the new GTLD program, particularly risks of abuse in the domain names. That was particularly defined. And this is the technical safeguards paper that's up, but right now I'm talking about the paper that I have about whether the safeguards have been implemented effectively. So if we can get that up, after that I'm going to turn the floor over to Calvin. So is it possible to switch papers? Yeah? And I'll wait for that to happen. But again, much of that advice was targeted to trying to mitigate those risks, whether it was the risk of abuse like farming, phishing, malware, or other deceptive conduct. And I see our upload is in progress, so that's good. Great. Or trying to implement safeguards that let the public have a dedicated place to complain, that let law enforcement have a place to complain. Those are some very targeted goals of the safeguards overall. So my papers go through this in detail. And I welcome people's feedback or comments. What my papers do is go through the safeguards applicable to all GTLDs, and those include who is safeguards. I think everybody has independent scrolling. It includes mitigating abusive activity. It includes security checks, so registries can detect abusive activity. And just as a high level note, many, if not most, of the safeguards really aim at responsibilities for the registries. But it's important to know that sometimes the responsibility of the registry is to require a registrar to do something. So sometimes these safeguards have downstream requirements, i.e., it runs from the registry to the registrar to the registrant. So in certain cases, it can be, a system of obligations. The next set of safeguards focused on those particular new GTLDs that were felt to raise particular concerns, and for shorthand, I call those regulated GTLDs. And again, certain safeguards applicable to those were implemented, and my papers really go through an assessment of whether the implementation was done in a way that would promote effective enforcement. And I would say overall, for all the categories of safeguards, safeguards applicable to all GTLDs, safeguards applicable to regulated GTLDs, and safeguards applicable to highly regulated GTLDs, there was certainly implementation of the safeguards. And in a few places, there are some concerns listed where the language is perhaps mushy or imprecise, which makes it necessarily hard for ICANN compliance to enforce. Or if there's simply concerns that the implementation left room for a higher risk of abusive behavior than was intended. And I think the big example there that has generated a lot of community input, particularly from the ALEC and the business constituency and the GAC, deals with the safeguards applicable to highly regulated GTLDs, where there was advice to have a proactive verification and validation of credentials for highly regulated GTLDs like charities, banks, or pharmacies before a registrant would be able to have a domain in that highly regulated area. And there were concerns raised about the practicality of how that would be implemented, it was ultimately implemented in a manner that requires a representation, i.e., whoever wants to buy a domain in that area would basically represent that they have the appropriate credentials, and then if there were complaints, there would be a duty to investigate, et cetera. But as I said, that's one that has generated a lot of input from the communities. With that said, I don't want to take more time on reading a paper to people. Really, the best way is for people to read this paper and give me any feedback. I will note, I know Carlos had some comments about basically how far back we need to go in terms of looking at the safeguards, because although there were safeguards applicable to the new GTLD program, that wasn't necessarily the beginning of safeguards conceptually. Conceptually, there were improvements made to the registrar agreement in the past as well. However, this paper really does focus more exclusively on the new GTLD program. So I leave it as a question for discussion about how far back we should be reaching in terms of comparing things. But I do note that it's our hope with the DNS abuse study to be able to at least draw a correlation to the rates of abuse between what's happening in the new GTLD domains and what's happening in legacy GTLD domains, because there are these additional safeguards where there were none before. It will be very interesting to see if abuse levels are different between new GTLDs and legacy GTLDs, to see if there are correlations there. So that's sort of my high-level summary, and putting the floor open now for questions.
Hey, thanks for that, Lorene. This is Jonathan. I guess as far as answering your general question about how far to go back, I think it's all going to be about being able to make the defensible argument about there being some relationship between changes in behavior and the new G program. And so I think it's as much about having an answer to that question as it is about some absolute going back. I think this is going to be problematic in some measure because streams were being delegated during the whole study period. So there was for different things, a different level of different start date if you to take into consideration. Anyway, so I'll go back to the queue. Jordan, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Lorene, I guess one thing I'm curious about is, like, if we're looking at sort of, what was suggested by, like, the GAC, for example, versus what was actually implemented in terms of safeguards, and I totally lost the ability to see the paper, so maybe this was addressed already, but is there a, are you also attempting to sort of, like, look at the results of the safeguard that was implemented and sort of, I guess, ask the question of, did it achieve the, if the GAC sort of articulated, we need a safeguard that looks like this, like the pre-verification on the sensitive strains, presumably that's to mitigate fraud or something like that, and then look to see, what was actually implemented, and then sort of say, well, did it actually achieve the goal that the GAC was trying to get at anyways? or maybe didn't, but in any case, trying to understand to what extent the safeguards that were adopted actually met the goal where they deviated from some of the other.
I think that's exactly the right question, Jordan, and actually I reformulated this paper from its initial version, which had really focused on what did the GAC advise and what was actually implemented in response to feedback from the team, which was, well, shouldn't we really be focusing on what was implemented because that's what's on the table? And so what I really tried to do with this next iteration, which I'd love to have you, which I'd love to get your feedback on, is what was implemented. And the only time where I really reached back, as in the case of the verification and validation, was if it was a particular hot button topic. So with the who is safeguard, one of the issues there, you know, was how ICANN decided to implement its own who is accuracy review project, and that project looked at accuracy of syntax and operability, but has not moved to accuracy of identity. So, you know, that's an example where we looked back to see the bigger context, and verification validation is another issue. But primarily the focus is on what was it intended to do and did it do it? But in terms of the answer, well, did it in fact do that? We don't know. We don't know because we don't yet have data from what we're hoping is going to be the DNS abuse study. And even then, we will only be able to draw a correlation because these safeguards basically created a whole synergy of changes. And it would be very hard to figure out if one particular change had an impact on abuse overall. I think the best we might be able to say is that all of these taken together, you know, changed the playing field. And when we look at the playing field, we see a correlation in the levels of abuse between GTLDs that had all these safeguards and GTLDs that didn't. I don't know that we would be able to get at anything more specifically than that. Does that answer your question, Jordan?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I guess, you know, it's probably, it sounds like you're already doing this, but it's like having a sort of taxonomy of the types of, you know, what's the safeguard trying to prevent for each safeguard, and then
Yes, I do have that.
Exactly. So then, you know, as we look at the follow-on data, or maybe this is something future review teams will have to look at, we can sort of say, you know, like, so for example, I imagine some of these safeguards are going to have, you know, be targeted in very different ways than, like, the pre-verification on the sensitive strings. So, you know, maybe, like, that's a specific area we can look to see if that type of abuse is actually happening or not.
That's exactly right. In fact, that's recommendation.
Okay, great. And
yeah.
Then when I can actually, I'll look at your paper on the.
Terrific. But you know, those are all good points. So other questions or comments? You know, what I really found is it's actually very, very complicated. It's complicated to figure out where the safeguards live in certain cases and what the intent was, and then we just don't have the data in many cases to figure out whether the intended goal was met. I'm not seeing more questions. So,
Lorin,
yes.
This is Carlos, if you allow me.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. This is Carlos for the for the record. I really recommend this paper. It's really a wonderful work. I want to comment two issues that you raised. One is that the implementation was not according to what the GAC expected. I mean, there were many comments in that direction. And I don't know if we want to go into this, but just to be prepared for comment when we go to the public. I mean, it's a very weird situation because what the GAC says in some areas, they say, listen, this is an area where we have a lot of regulation. So the registry should put a telephone number to call Laureen at the Federal Trade Commission if there is abuse. But then what happens if you are not in the U.S. or if you are in a jurisdiction where there is no such an agency, or the agency doesn't have the powers that they have in different countries? So this is a probable discussion that might come up again. I mean, the issue that we have the local jurisdictions in the minds of the GACs, and we have ICANN trying to please everybody around the world. I mean, and that's fair. And the other comment I wanted to make on the data, that we might go follow the arguments of the top-level recommendations that Stan has been promoting, and ask ourselves, if a highly regulated sector, let's say finance, had a lot of abuse before the new GTLDs, and how did it happen, and how is it now with all these banks, because we recognize a lot of banks protecting their brand and using it heavily. So we might want to discuss this type of recommendations for future discussion of this issue, because if they stay on the same general level of data that we have been doing, they won't find anything next year or the year after or afterwards. I mean, we have to be very, very specific and try to consider if we want to go into specific categories of regulation and suggest that they should be checked by this specific category. But I really recommend everybody. And when I mentioned Laureen, not to go to the whole story of who is and so on, I don't erase it from the document. The document is very valuable. My comment was geared only, okay, for the document of the CCT review. I don't want to see overlaps with the who is exercises, because they have already called the second one the criteria. But don't revise anything out. I think it's a great piece of legal research. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. I really appreciate your support, and also I think you raised really excellent points about being specific with our recommendations. And it would be very interesting if, when we get the abuse data, if we see that there's abuse in certain GTLDs with particular subject matter, perhaps highly regulated, perhaps not, but that would be something to look at closely for generating recommendations, and we just have to see where the data guides us. But the other thing is, we also do know already high areas that have generated a lot of concern, and that's something that even at this point, you know, we can be sensitive to with our recommendations. So I appreciate that feedback. Any other questions or comments on this topic? Okay, I'm not seeing hands, and I'm not hearing anyone. So, Calvin, could we go to your paper on the technical safeguards?
I'm sorry, I just was muted inadvertently. Can I raise a point quickly?
Oh, absolutely, Stan. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is actually not specific to this paper, but I just came from a meeting this morning in which an FTC report was discussed. It's the one on entities that sue patent infringers, patent enforcement entities. And one of the points made in by all the discussants, the concern was, it was a great piece of work, but the recommendations went well beyond what could be supported by the research. And I guess I'm particularly sensitive to that, having just sat through this for about 2 hours this morning. So I think we should be careful that we don't reach recommendations that can't directly be supported by the outcome of our research. It's all right to say more research is needed.
I think that's a fair point. You know, and I think here we're I think here it's we get into this qualitative versus quantitative issue that has been sort of a theme. We do know objectively that highly regulated industries have certain risks associated with them because the public will give more sensitive information to those entities in order to have those entities do what they do, you know, such as, you know, a medical establishment or an accountant or something like that. So that is objective. Now, whether there's actually more abuse going on in those sectors, we don't know. That's something that we would need further research for. But I do think there are some objective facts that can lead to recommendations, and there is objective data that can lead to others. And I would just say, you know, in an effort to be mindful of your point, Stan, that we shouldn't forget that, you know, those are both sets of information that can feed into our recommendations, that studies and data from those studies are not the only sources of information we have.
Yeah, I just think we just have to be careful.
I agree. I think we're generally on the same page, and if we have to disagree at the margins, we'll be able to hammer that out.
Every discussant at this session this morning said, great research, the recommendations were not supported by the research.
So that's a cautionary tale for us. I don't dispute that. Other questions or comments? Okay, then can we move on to Calvin and the technical safeguards paper, which is already up. Thank you, kind ICANN magicians.
Good evening, everyone. Just very briefly, I'm going to try and keep it as short as possible. But basically, I now was tasked with verifying whether technical safeguards applicable to the new TTLD implemented. And they, I'm just going to quickly run through them. They are the, you know, have registry operators been technically vetted? Has DNSSEC been deployed and monitored? And has wildcarding been prevented? Or has orphan view been appropriately managed? Has thick queries been implemented, and has centralized zone, access to zone file data been implemented, as well as the expedited registry security request process and the voluntary framework for high security zones and top-level domain draft program development. Now, but basically, you know, the brief rundown is the ones from ACF are the ones that have been contractually implemented in the registry ICANN agreement. So the short answer is yes. And as I've indicated before, it appears that this was the low-hanging fruit on which ICANN could actually do these things via the registry contract. Having some reflection on that, I'm going to expand that and say not only was it low-hanging fruit, but if you think about it, ICANN's core mission is the technical stability of the DNS. So it was also imperative that it get anything to do with stability right. and that's probably one of the reasons why this has been so absolutely. The last two points, the expedited registry security request and the voluntary framework for high security zones, those two will be ERSR processes being it's not actually a process that just will be new security zones, but it's available to you all, and it hasn't been implemented, for instance, in the case of tech careers, doesn't actually mean that the accuracy, for instance, of the tech careers has improved. But there are different processes, for instance, on that to actually go and have a by which that those measurements are being trying to achieve. Brian gave an extensive email comment that on this, and I've made a couple of red line changes in reaction to their minor changes to his email, and then he's also sent a nice 50-page paper, which I haven't been able to distill into my paper as of yet, and I'm hoping to get to that real soon now. But basically, that's the high level summary of that, and yeah, I'm prepared to take any questions or elucidate further as may be required.
Sorry. Cough, cough. Thank you, Calvin. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Calvin?
Hi, it's Brian. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you.
Yes.
Great. Yeah, Calvin, I just want to encourage you to go through the new GDLD safeguards against DNS abuse report. It will be very helpful in adding a lot of levels of detail to what you've written here. And, for example, that compliance does monitor wildcarding and orphan glue, but we just don't receive any complaints on them. So that could be one sort of proxy measure for effectiveness. Encouraging you to look at it, and I think it'll be very helpful for you. So, thanks.
Agreed, from what I've seen in the several times I've started going through it.
And that's, thank you, Brian. That's an excellent point, and one Calvin, that I was very mindful of when I was doing my paper, which was trying to figure out if there were actual complaints that were being generated that related to specific safeguards. And sometimes I could figure that out and sometimes I couldn't. And in fact, some of the recommendations that I've generated relate to suggestions for how I can compliance reports on complaints. Because right now there are many times where you can't tell if a certain safeguard has been complained about because it's not reported in that way. It's reported under a more general category like abuse, for example, or in WHOIS, you may have complaints, but you don't know if it's an identity verification issue or if it's something else. So that's a good reason for looking at the ICANN compliance data, because it may be that some of our recommendations go to how things are being reported and transparency issues as sort of a stepping stone to be able to get better data in the future.
Agreed. I know our team on the registry side of things have a I'm not sure what the right wording is, but they have a relationship with ICANN compliance, which sometimes can be testy.
And I found that everyone has been very helpful on staff with getting us the information we need or finding out if that information exists. So it's a great resource. Any other questions or comments for Calvin? Go ahead.
I have one further comment quickly to make, another thing that I need to add on is your suggestion of giving some footnotes or definitions to certain terms, such as an explanation of wildcarding, and I intend doing that as well. And that might feed into a larger definition section that we might need to put together for our report as well.
Thank you for reminding me about that. That is one of the things we had discussed that may be a general issue for the final or preliminary report that the review team does as a whole. We're dealing with some very precise and in certain cases rather technical things that we may know the definition of, or some of us may know, but the community as a whole may not know. Again, particularly Joe and Jane Public. So that's one of the things we discussed in my sub-team that may be useful for the review team as a whole, that perhaps we want to come up with a glossary or a definitions document so that when we're using these very precise terms like wildcarding your economic index that you refer to so often, Stan H, and I'm going to massacre it, but the H one, that we define what that is. And I see Carlton has a hand up. Carlton, I see your hands up, but I'm not hearing you.
We may have the staff man muted his line, so if you can unmute him, then he'll be able to talk.
Thank
you, Maureen. This is Carlton. I just want to say, I'm sure you know of this, there was an original assignment to me about our new procedures effective enforcing safeguards and emphasis on the new procedures. And what I did was go through all the new procedures that were broadly implemented in the new GTLD program, starting at the board level, and then coming through to show what it is that they were intended to do and how it has happened, what has happened since then. So that paper I sent you earlier on, what I was looking at was all the procedures, and I got down to the ticks and what has happened in terms of abuse levels and so on. I got some information from through Brian and Elisa stuff from compliance about the PICs and what has come out of the PICs. I am starting from the position of looking at results and backing my way into it. And I used that information that was provided from some clients. And I looked again at reports that were generated from various kinds of abuses from outside actors, like APWG and Spam House and so on. And kind of look at what they're saying as opposed to what the pigs are saying. If you recall, these kinds of abuse now are within the envelope for compliance reporting by virtue of the Spec 11 requirements. Previously, they were in the RAA, and the dependency was on the RAA and the RAA combinations to take care of them. With the new procedures now as part of Spec 11, they rise one level up to registry level, and so you have a sense now of what can happen if the abuses and the response to the abuses have been tracked by compliance. Generally, what you see is that maybe they're tracking them, but the reporting from the various actors are so different that you don't have a leveling of what really is happening. So if you look at that paper, I gathered some information, put it together on specific abuses, and you can see where there might be some kind of delta between what compliance is reporting and what the other actors in the area are seeing. I just thought I might mention it there because this business of evidence collection and reporting has come up so often in the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlton. I will definitely look back at that. I recall looking at it when I was drafting the implementation paper, but it's absolutely a good idea to go back to that. Can we mute the background just so we don't get...
That's Carlton's line.
Okay, thank you. We haven't gotten to a discussion of the PICs yet, and I fear we're not going to be able to get to it since our time is up now. But I did look at the information about complaints regarding the PICs, and it's very sparse information because it doesn't seem like there have been, there is a lot of information about complaints about PICs and enforcement activities. But I will definitely look back at that. I think the issue, because I did read that paper, I think we have general information about abuse levels in general, but it doesn't really reflect on the new GTLD specifically, and it certainly doesn't compare abuse levels in the new GTLDs and the legacy GTLDs, which is what we really would like to get information on and what we're hoping to still get information on. Jonathan, I don't know how you want to proceed here. If we want to go to back to Jordan and have a longer call or table this and schedule some time in addition at some point.
Yeah, I don't know how people are going to do about extending or not. So we should probably just wrap up because people are being lagging.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to extend to talk about my stuff. So what I was going to suggest is, based on the feedback we had on our own call earlier in the week, I'm going to revamp the high-level findings doc, and I'll recirculate that so if people have comments at that point, it will be helpful to deal with them offline.
Okay, so yeah, thanks, Jordan. And so we just need to underscore that as stuff is getting circulated, the importance of providing feedback, off the call is only going up. So let's make sure and get feedback back to folks, so that you're not hearing this the first time on these calls, and we'll move on. And the things we didn't get to with the picks or whatever, we'll move. to the next call. I don't know if it was housekeeping that we needed to do, but I'll be reaching out. We've shared AM Global's paper. I'm hoping to get Carlos Carlton and Wado maybe to combine forces to look at the applicant survey results and the AM Global survey results and begin to answer some of the questions about the effectiveness of the application evaluation process in the Global South. But I will put that over email as well. All right, folks. Thanks a lot for the call, and let's be vigilant about things when they're circulated about getting back to people. Thank you.
And also, I just wanted to note that Carlos recommends a discussion on the PICs, and yes, I definitely think we need to do that in whatever next call we have.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Laureen, and thanks, everyone, who presented. Thanks, Stan. You have carried a lot of weight this call. Thanks a lot. And we'll see you all soon.
Thanks.